from Hollywood, California, and the United Kingdom. It's Free Flowing Friday on the Andy and Amanda Show. Welcome aboard. Your special guests, Andy Kimball, Amanda Love, Maybe Cornell Butler, and you, the Andy and Amanda Show.
Well, hello, folks. Welcome aboard. It's another free-flowing Friday with the Andy and Amanda Show here on Blog Talk Radio, coast-to-coast program. Talking to you live from Hollywood, California. We're standing by for Amanda Love. Anyway, I want to send my very best out to everybody. Hope everybody's doing great and real well, ending up this work week. It is a Friday. Happy hour is going to start soon. We know it's 5 o'clock somewhere. And, of course, it's a noontime show here in Southern California. We have another gorgeous day with beautiful blue skies, light breezes, temperatures in the 70s, and just, boy, love it out here. If you haven't been to California, you got to put it on your agenda to get out here. And I think Amanda is now joining us live from the UK. Hey, man, how are you doing? How are you? How's it going?
I'm good. I'm sorry. I had some technical issues there getting on the show. But I'm here. I'm here, my people.
I figured, and I'm glad you are here. I knew you'd be joining us, and we were waiting for your arrival. You know, we rolled out the red carpet. We said, "Where's Amanda?" We know she'll be coming on here. But it is Friday, as we were just saying. It's our free-flowing Friday. Going to cover some news. Going to cover some fun conversation, and maybe, just maybe, your calls at 515-605-9888. Welcome you aboard our show, as we do each and every program, if you care to join us. If not, we know you'll be listening to the podcast on whichever distribution channel you might be listening to. We welcome you aboard at that time, too, whatever time it is. You might be listening to the show on Saturday or Sunday. But we're live right now, and again, our number is 515-605-9888. You can also get on to the show by emailing andyandamandashow@gmail.com. Just send a request, hey, I'd like to join your show, and then we'll send you an invite to get on the show via the internet. Or you'll get an invite, and you just click the link, and it'll bring you onto the show. Just make sure you have a headset, speakers, whatever, you know, so you can talk to us, however that is. I'm imagining a headset and speakers or microphone, whatever it might be you have there. But anyway, Amanda, how are you doing?
My darling, I'm doing really well, sweetheart. How about yourself?
Doing fine here. Fine, you know, it's a fine morning, a fine morning, tip of the morning.
Fine.
No, it's a fine afternoon now. It's noontime. I want to go get some lunch. Why don't you do the news? I'll be right back.
Oh, so you're going to follow me. Okay, I'll take over. That's fine. I see how it is. I have to throw it up late, right? I'll give you the run. I don't know what's happening here in the UK, my darling. So there's various things, actually, covering COVID. A lot going on to do with that. Let's see. So Portugal, okay, have slowed down their vaccinations being given out to key workers because of shortages. Like, only 10% of key workers will receive a vaccine, and the rest will be given to two groups of people, one group being those aged 80 and over, and the other one aged between 50 and 79 who have health conditions and, you know, like diseases and things of kidneys, heart, whatever that may be. And on Friday, Boris Johnson said that the UK will donate most of the UK surplus vaccine supplies to poorer countries and is urging other rich countries to do the same. So the Foreign Office Minister, James Cleverly, has promised that the government would be a global force for good in fighting the pandemic, and unlike some countries, the UK would not use the promise of vaccine supplies to other countries as short-term diplomatic leverage. But it was difficult to say at this stage when the sharing would happen. So far, the UK has seen 17 million people vaccinated, and 573,724 having their second doses. So we're making some progress with that. We're making progress. Northern Ireland's COVID-related death rates have fallen for a third week, which is great news. But they are also extending their lockdown until April the 1st. In Wales, their lockdown rules are easing a little. Tomorrow, with changes to how many people can meet and so on. And full details of this can be found online, as there's so much to cover. And in the city of, I think this is how you pronounce it, Andy, Serrana in Brazil, they are doing a test by vaccinating the whole town of 30,000 people to see if it lowers the infection rate over a period of 2 months, because they are looking to get life back to normal as soon as possible without the use of masks, etc. So they also mentioned how people have been wanting to buy or rent places in the city in order to receive a vaccination. And other cities like Rio, they have stopped vaccination due to running out of those doses. So again, our healthcare workers are also crying out for better protection, since at least 930 of them have died from COVID and many are experiencing long-term effects. And in my opinion, they need better masks and equipment. And I feel it's only fair that the government provide all they need, considering they are the ones on the front line trying to heal everybody and deal with it all firsthand. So as far as I'm concerned, they should be priority. But we shall see what happens with that. And the BBC has reported that a team of scientists have used artificial intelligence to work out where the next level of coronavirus could emerge. And they've said that researchers used a combination of fundamental biology and machine learning. Their computer algorithm predicted many more potential hosts of new virus strains than have previously been detected. And their findings have been published in the journal Nature Communications. Dr. Marcus Blagrove, something like that, virologist from the University of Liverpool, UK, who was involved in the study, explained, "We want to know where the next coronavirus might come from. One way they're generated is through a recombination between two existing coronavirus. So two viruses infect the same cell and they recombine into a daughter virus that would be an entirely new strain. So the researchers were able to plug an existing biological evidence into an algorithm, teaching a computer how to spot viruses and host species that were most likely to be a source of this recombination." So that's I find that quite fascinating and very interesting.
Wow.
The way they're moving forward with trying to detect it all and overcome this. It's on one hand, you know, it's a tragic circumstance that we're facing with all this COVID situation. But on the other, it's fascinating to see how humanity is moving forward with this, what areas we're looking into, where the funding's going, the technology's going, to stop any more pandemics. So, that's the main news. It's literally various parts of COVID are coming to the surface right now. So.
And it's interesting to see what the various countries, you know, what the various regions in the UK are doing and how they're handling it and how they're working around it and trying to dive into it and section off portions of the population and and even in as you were saying in certain countries are now taking X amount of the population and saying, well, what happened if we did this? What would happen if we did that? Sporadically, but you're starting to see more, government participation in the research of the cure and the research of the remedy of this in various countries around the world. Slowly but surely, we're starting to see that, which is good. It's great to see.
Yeah,
it really is.
Absolutely.
The numbers, here as in the United States, you probably read if the news. Broke around the world. We've had some frigid storms, freezing storms, frigid temperatures in parts of Texas and the South, which hasn't been reached in decades, in many, many, many years. In Texas, the state. Let me go back up just a minute here. In the United States, we have what's called a power grid. Imagine a great big screen that covers the entire country. Like a screen like you'd have on your screen door, like a big screen. Just imagine the visualization that covers the whole country. So that grid is supplied with energy that is generated from various sources around the country, and it forms a great big grid. And we have this whole, we would hope that this grid would not be affected because it could affect a large part of the country. In the 90s, no, it wasn't the 90s, it was 2003 or 4, what am I saying, around 2004 or 5 maybe, somewhere in there, a part of the grid was damaged and it turned off all the electricity in New York. I mean, that's, you know, so it's very powerful. But here's, it's federal, you know, it's the whole country, covers every state except the state of Texas. They opted not to partake. They opted to be their own grid. They put their own grid over their own screen, if you will, over their own state, and not participate for cost cutting, for tax savings, for, you know, they want to financially participate in that grid. And therefore, the big umbrella grid can't swoop in and say, "Bam! We're gonna shoot some power down there. We're gonna give you some extra energy. We're gonna help remedy this via that big screen that covers the whole country." They have their own screen that covers the state of Texas. So when you get freezing, you know, Texas is, you know, the furthest part of Texas, if you look at the map, is like, it has the latitude of down here where Miami is, or further, you know, San Padre Island is way south, you know, and you get warm temperatures down there, and you know, people go down there for winter break, and for like they would Fort Lauderdale, Florida, or Southern California, because it's warm. Now, who would ever think that you're going to get temperatures in the low 30s, the upper 20s, and pipes break, and wires go down, and power supplies, and generators don't start. Generators aren't starting down there to supply power. So you're seeing tens of thousands of people waiting in line in frigid temperatures for hours, trying to get propane, trying to get water. Then you have to, because there's no water, the plants that purify and clean the water for distribution through your spigots in your home aren't working. They can't power them up. So there's now people have to boil water if they can get water. And if you don't have electric power to boil it, how do you boil it unless you have gas? And hopefully that's working. So it is an incredible situation what's going on in Texas right now. And I feel my heart goes out to everybody in Texas. I know we've had listeners in Texas. I don't know if we are right now, given the situation. But really, we're with you. And you can get on the Red Cross websites and other websites. And if you care to participate in remedying and donating and contributing to the people there, I'm sure they'd very much appreciate it, and greatly so. But that's, you know, it's a horrible situation right now in the state of Texas.
It is. I mean, a friend of mine sent me some pictures and said it was ice that built up on the inside of the property where they just couldn't keep warm. And I was just, wow, I was absolutely stunned. As far as I read, I think it said something like the first time in 30 years that Texas has seen that kind of dramatic storm. And I think it came from, they called it the Arctic blast, I think it was, and due to, in previous years, the low pressures that kind of storm maintain and stop it from spreading to places like Canada and the US. But unfortunately, that did happen this time for whatever scientific reason. But I saw a lot of pictures and things and a story saying about 100 car pileup on freeway. I was just, wow, so shocking, and I feel for everybody there.
It's unbelievable. President Joe Biden here is signing a major disaster declaration for the state of Texas, and he will be visiting the state next week. You know, thousands are without power. It's the fourth night in a row. You imagine going through frigid temperatures in your home. People are lighting fires. People are burning. I've heard stories, people burning cribs, people burning their furniture to stay warm. The stories are just unbelievable. But, you know, thousands continue without power, fourth night now. And Texas is in a frigid grip. I mean, the temperatures are sub-freezing. And Biden said Friday that he's going to be signing a major, major disaster relief declaration. And the interesting thing is that Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, we all might know who Ted Cruz is by now, he went on to Cancun, Mexico during this. He went to Mexico. It's the worst electricity outage in United States history right now in his home state of Texas. And yes, Texas Senator Ted Cruz takes off for Cancun, Mexico. He did acknowledge, however, on Thursday that he had traveled to Mexico for a family vacation that was previously scheduled to be with his daughters. And you know, and he said that you know, leaving his home state as thousands of his constituents struggled was obviously not a good thing to do, and he just was guiding his daughters, going traveling with them to Mexico, and then turning around, and coming right back. But I think, let's see. You know, it's funny. The news happened so fast. You know, we have a very short-term memory here, maybe around the world, but I know here in this country, you know, the news comes and goes. Something devastating, something that can really affect your perception of a particular politician or an individual in the news, and it kind of comes, and something else comes, and a major disaster, then a political something, somebody says something, somebody shoots somebody, whatever happens, and whatever that was just kind of disappears pretty quickly. And it'll be interesting to see in the next election, in the senatorial election in Texas, if you know what the memory is and how the Democrats are going to resurface his decision. Does he really care about his neighbor there in Texas? He takes off for, hey, I'm going to Cancun. Hope you're all right. I'm going to Cancun. You know, give me work on a tan. You know. No, but he did. I'm having fun, but he went down to accompany his daughters in all seriousness, and it was pretty planned, and you know, maybe he didn't, you know, he said, well, you know, he figured it's going to be handled. It's okay. We have people, we have experts and officials and companies, and electric companies and gas companies and water companies and federal relief and FEMA and all these things, and it should just bam, kick in almost on autopilot. This is all going to happen. You know, what am I going to go do? A shovel of snow? What am I personally going to do? Well, he should be there for support. He should be stopping by. He should be visiting, flying helicopters around to various affected areas, making himself visible, showing empathy, showing concern. That's what a senator does. That's what a political official, that's what an elected official does. Crisis.
Yeah,
that's what you do. But
I agree with that, Andy.
It'll be interesting. And here's the interesting thing as well: the COVID-19 vaccine distribution has all but stopped in Texas. Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Okay.
And the energy crisis has spanned down just below the border of Texas into Mexico. The president of Mexico, Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador, he urged Mexicans on Thursday to conserve as much electricity as they possibly can as the blackouts continue to roll from the north in central parts of the country, you know, and that's followed by problems caused by the outage in the grid system and so forth. So it's kind of interesting. It really, you know, how this is all being handled and how it's affecting the various regions and what – you know, how we're coming to remedy this. It's you know, we would have hoped that we would be able to foresee it and jump in and do something, and they were caught. They were just caught. But
we're certainly living in some crazy times, right, with all of this going on and, you know, various situations that we're trying to juggle all at the same time, from Mother Nature and, you know, the pandemic and the political issues that we've all been experiencing. It's just crazy things we live in.
It is. And it's also, as I was saying, the interesting thing, you know, I can sit back and kind of bird's eye view and watching all the various players, the moving chess pieces, so to speak, that provide remedy, where, what, you know, the governors, the senators, the president, the population, the various organizations, before organizations, and just watch all these pieces come into play. The interesting, another interesting aspect of all this is that the Republican governor there, his name is Greg Abbott, blamed the grid operators and the iced over wind turbines, but has gone easier on another culprit, a failed culprit, which is the oil and gas industry, in that the state's dominant business is, of course, the oil and gas industry, and also his biggest political contributor.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and the toll continues. You know, just yesterday, the toll continues to deepen. You know, historic winter storms that have killed now, you know, I think about a dozen people. It's just unbelievable what's going on. But anyway.
It is. It really is.
Yeah, we just wish them all the best down there, and you know, we'll, warmer temperatures are coming your way, Texas, and things are remedying. We feel real bad for all the people who've been so grossly affected there. You know what's also interesting? This week has shown the sharpest decline in COVID cases since the epidemic.
Wow.
In 1 week, 29%. Now, let's correlate that. What has also happened this week? What has also happened? Freezing temperatures, testing sites going down, no testing available, people not venturing out for testing. And now we also show in 1 week a 29% decrease in new cases. Do you think there could be a doom? Interesting.
I know, right, Andy? The mind boggles. That's a valid point, though, because I don't think that's one that people would generally reach for. Because
only on the Andy and Amanda show.
Right. Yes,
new deaths, last 24 hours up to now, 1,251 people died from COVID. Total deaths in this country has exceeded 500,000. It's 506,578. In the UK, it's 119,920 with 533 new cases in the UK. New cases, 40,837. Yesterday, just look at the number from yesterday, okay, 70,092. 2 days ago, 72,421. Up to on the afternoon time, 40,837. I don't know what it'll be. I guess we'll report that on Monday. We'll come back and see what on the Monday show. We'll see what it ended up being today. But it's just interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm from, as we said several times, I'm from the Northeast. I'm from Pennsylvania, where COVID is also taking a very large toll. And also. Where our show coordinator, Cornell Butler, is, Cornell and I come from pretty close areas there in suburbs of Philadelphia. But we've never met, as you and I have never met.
No.
And Cornell and I were almost neighbors at one point, so it's kind of interesting. But
that's amazing.
isn't it? Here we are meeting thousands of miles away. But I moved out here years ago in Southern California, and I just wouldn't want to live anywhere else. You know, high taxes, a lot of people, traffic. Everything's slower now because of COVID. But even with all that, all the highways and the freeways, and the, you know, it's just a slower pace. It's whatever. Yeah. No, it's not really. But it's slower. It is a slower, more relaxed, more hospitable environment. It just seems to me, coming from the hustle and bustle of New York and move over, and you come out here, it just seems to me, and you know, I'm sure the people who would debate me on this here, but my own life experience is that, you know, you talk about something, an opportunity, people say, hey, I know somebody who, hey, you know, call me, let's do, hey, you know, that's a cool idea. Let's get together and talk about that. And just, you know, more so than the, you know, when you're on a highway, my own experience, that's all I can speak to. And I've heard people, you know, say, what, really? You're on a highway and you have to move over five lanes because you realize your exit is coming up soon and you're not from here and you need to get over. People let you over. You try that on a two-lane highway in the Schuylkill Expressway outside of Philadelphia. No way. No way. No way. Anyway, I like California. Amanda, we're going to get you here too. One day we're going to be doing the show together from here. That we're hoping that'll happen sooner than later.
Wouldn't it
be great?
Yeah, definitely. Just watch this space, people. Watch this space.
You bet. The other incredible news, especially me being such a fan of the space program and exploration, that the Perseverance rover has set back new color images and never before seen view of what it looks like to land on the red planet. Imagine this. Mars has an atmosphere. You know, we landed on the moon. The moon doesn't have any atmosphere, right? Mars actually has nitrogen and other gases. It has an atmosphere which would be poisonous to us, but it has gravity, it has an atmosphere, and because it has an atmosphere, you can't just, you know, go down and land on it. It's similar to coming through the atmosphere on Earth. You know, they have the heat shields.
I can understand those poisonous gases, my darling.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. and the so what happens is what something looks like the Apollo capsule that contains the rover and everything is going through the atmosphere of Mars at 2,500 miles an hour and slows down to a snail's pace and makes a pinpoint landing amongst rocks and hills and uneven terrain, guided by JPL, the Jet Propulsion Lab here in outside of LA, and I've been there, I'll tell you about that in a minute, pinpoint landing on Mars safely. Rover gets out, and underneath the rover is the equivalent of a drone, a mini helicopter that's going to be flying around Mars.
That's pretty impressive. That is so impressive.
And eventually, they're going to be sending back live samples back to Earth from Mars. That's going to happen.
Wow.
A couple years ago, I met a friend, he's a friend of my daughter's, and we've become friends since, and he's a Stanford student, university, and also has a residency at Jet Propulsion Lab, and what he's doing is designing the equivalent of like a Goodyear blimp, like a big balloon that's going to float in the atmosphere of Jupiter and measure gases and environmental factors and so forth. He's working on this project and designing it as an intern at JPL. And we've become friends. He's my daughter's age, but I'm a huge, I always wanted to be an astronaut, and I love watching stars and really into astronomy, and he loves it. And he's now he's like pre-astronaut training program. Talked about it one time. I'm like, why don't you go? Why don't you make it a plan? I call my son. He's not.
No.
I give him fatherly advice and say, you want to. He's got such a passion for space.
Yeah.
That I'm like, why don't you, what are you, 23, 24? Go to Mars. And he tells me sincerely, if he had the opportunity to go to Mars, knowing it would be a one-way trip, he would go right now, knowing he would die there. He would go today. And I understand that. Yeah, isn't that cool? I understand it. So he's invited, I went out to JPL and given VIP tour credentials and so forth, and got an inside tour that he gave me with my daughter. And I actually held parts of the rover, part of what the Perseverance, what's on Mars right now. Mm-hmm. I saw them laser cut part of the components, and I've held those components in my hand.
Wow.
A component that would fit in your palm, a component a little larger than a golf ball, fit in my hand that cost the United States government $50,000. Just one little component. And then I went out back at JPL, and they recreated the Mars environment. Not the atmosphere, obviously.
Of course, but yeah.
Yeah, they replaced the nitrogen on Mars with a different kind of gas.
I can just see it. They got everybody eating chili that day, and it's like, guys, eat some chili so we can go to see the gas.
Different kind of gas. Because they couldn't get the exact environment, so they substituted the gas, and that's why they called me.
I see.
They know I like to eat the chili. I'm a big fan of chili. But anyway,
you walked away with the label of Captain Thunderpants or something.
but they go up and you see the Martian environment, and they test the various tire treads. And I saw them do it. I saw the exact replica of what's on Mars right now, Perseverance, roving across the made up Martian ground with the rocks and boulders and hills in back of JPL, and saw Perseverance rolling across, and they tried different treads, to what's the best tire. It's so cool. And then I saw them remotely control, and I was in the mission control center and saw people controlling satellites with a joystick, like you would on a game.
Wow.
They're controlling, firing rockets and moving satellites around in space right in front of me. And it
That's
was so cool.
Cool.
So
yeah.
cool. Yeah. And
wow, what a thing to witness.
Amanda, if you do come here to LA, which we hope will happen, we'll make sure that you and I both will go. Maybe on the show, maybe we'll go to JPL, and we can't record too much, actually. We can audio record, I think, but we'll You and I will go to. I'll show you JPL. It would be great to take you there. And also, you know what else is here in LA?
Thank you. What's that?
At the Science Museum is Endeavor. The space shuttle Endeavor is here, just a few miles from my home. Yeah, yeah, it's also
that's
here.
So cool! Wow. Yeah, I'm up for that, Andy. I'm up for that.
Very
what was
cool.
it for an adventure?
Yeah. So that's huge news to me. And folks, you to go to your major paper in your city, or CNN, or MSNBC, and just look at some of the pictures that are being sent back. Look at the quality of these images that are being sent back by Perseverance rover right now after it landed on Mars. Unbelievable.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
I'm so going to check that out because that's just fascinating to me.
And they're having fun with this too. Like they send, you know, this thing can tweet. Rover is a computer, like a robot. And it can send a Twitter message. Welcome to my lifelong, my new home. You know, it's sending back tweets. And they're having some fun with it too. They're having it send back postcards. You know, like you know how you can take an image and go online and make a postcard of an image. Well, it's sending back postcards of a landing site.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing!
I mean, they're having some fun with this thing too, and it's so cool. You know, we're all like, you know, they're like kids, like you know, like children. It's so cool. But the descent and landing was incredible, and they had a camera on the descent stage of the spacecraft that captured perspective, something that was never possible in previous missions.
Wow. That's mind-blowing.
One of the tweets it sent back, you know, this is a quote, not from a person. This is a quote from the spaceship. It says, from the spaceship, on the Twitter account, bam, you know, sending a tweet, right, how do you, is it tweet or twit, whatever it is. It says, this shot from a camera on my jetpack captures me in midair just before my wheels touch down. And go to the Perseverance Twitter account, folks, and have a conversation. I mean, tweet back.
Yeah. That's amazing.
We should send them a tweet or twat from the – if you – is it – you tweeted, twatted, tweet – I don't know, whatever it is. We should send them one from our show. Don't we have a tweeter, whatever it is? Don't we have one of them?
yes, we do. yes, we do have a Twitter account, my darling. And the I want to say the address, but, you know, the handle, I guess, whatever you want to call it, is at AndyAmanda2. So yeah, that would be amazing to
just Andy Amanda
be in communication.
At twitter.com, AndyAmanda2, that's it. That's our Twitter handle, AndyAmanda2.
Yeah,
that's
so the Twitter address, obviously, if you're entering in a web browser, is twitter.com/AndyAmanda2. I think that's the way it works. So I'm so used to going into the app, I don't really think about typing out the full address. So when it comes to typing out the full address, I'm like, okay, it's this or is it that way, you know? But, yeah.
Well, cool. All right, folks, remember that. Also, we have Facebook, we're on Instagram, and, of course, Blog Talk Radio, and of course, some of you, a lot of you are hearing us on various podcasts by iHeartRadio, on iTunes, on Chrome, on Apple, on iTunes, we're on a lot of podcast distribution sites right now, which is
Spotify,
just terrific. Spotify,
Pandora, yeah.
Yeah, Pandora, everywhere, which is great. You know, I think we touched upon this on Wednesday's show, that Biden had a great town hall on Tuesday night with Anderson Cooper from CNN. It was wonderful to see him speak, although there was some – he misspoke. Hey, listen, we talked when Trump misspoke. We're going to talk about when Biden does the same. He addressed a little girl so sweetly and told the little girl that the coronavirus doesn't spread from kids to parents, so you don't have to worry about affecting your mom or your daddy, and that is – absolutely not true. It does and can spread from kids to parents. There's a couple of little things. But, you know, he misspoke, and what political leader has not? And you know, we just want to mention that. I don't want to come off as every time Trump made a faux pas, we covered it. When Biden does, we don't cover it. No, we will mention it. You know, there haven't been a whole lot so far, but there have been some. And the you know, he – people know that this even Trump himself last February 8th of 2020 said, hey, this thing is airborne. It doesn't discriminate. It can affect anybody. And Trump was absolutely right. Why he didn't do anything about it, we don't know. But he was right when he said that.
Yeah.
Anyway, what a lot of people don't know And what our inside field reporters have here on the Andy and Amanda show have gotten back to us with thorough investigation and carefully, it was very top secret. Most people didn't know this. It was hidden from most of the population that Donald Trump was in the wings in Milwaukee when Joe Biden presented his town hall. He was on the other side of the stage. And
oh, really? Okay.
Yes. Certain parts of the town hall were edited from public consumption, but not from the Andy and Amanda show. It was very, don't ask how we got it. Connections. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Yeah. So we're going to play part of the town hall, and you're going to hear – here's the proof. Here's the evidence. I don't need to talk about it anymore. Here's the evidence. Here we go. You're going to hear Joe Biden and Donald Trump's reaction to Biden, a section of Biden's town hall. Interesting. Take a listen.
When do you think this pandemic is – when is it going to be done? When are we going to get back to normal?
Well, all the experts all the committee that I put together, the leading researchers in the world in the United States are on this committee of mine, headed by Dr. Fauci and others. They tell me, be careful not to predict things that you don't know for certain what's going to happen, because then you'll be held accountable. I get that. But let me tell you what I think based on all that I've learned and all that I've studied and all that I think that I know. It's a high probability that the vaccinations that are available today and the new one, Johnson & Johnson, God willing, will prove to be useful, that with those vaccinations, the ability to continue to spread the disease is going to diminish considerably because of what they call herd immunity.
Herd mentality?
Herd immunity.
Herd mentality?
Herd immunity.
Herd mentality?
Herd immunity.
Herd mentality?
Herd immunity. And now they're saying somewhere around 70% of the people have to constitute. Some people said 50, 60, but a significant number have to be in a position where they have been vaccinated and or they've been through it and
have antibodies.
And have antibodies.
Herd mentality?
Herd immunity. And so if that works that way, as my mother would say, with the grace of God and the goodwill of the neighbors, that by next Christmas, I think we'll be in a very different circumstance, God willing, than we are today.
Herd mentality?
Herd immunity. I think a year from now, when it's 22 below zero here, a year from now, I think that there'll be significantly fewer people having to be socially distanced, have to wear masks, etc. But we don't know. So I don't want to overpromise anything here. I told you when I ran and when I got elected, I will always level with you. Use Franklin Roosevelt's example. I'll shoot you, give it straight from the shoulder. Straight from the shoulder what I know and what I don't know.
I understand it better than anybody.
We don't know for certain, but it is highly unlikely that by the beginning of next year's traditional school year in September, we are not significantly better off than we are today. But it matters. It matters whether you continue to wear that mask. It matters whether you continue to socially distance. It matters whether you wash your hands with hot water. Those things matter. They matter. And that can save a lot of lives while we're getting to this point, we get to herd immunity.
Herd mentality?
Herd immunity.
You've made passing a COVID relief bill the focus of your first 100 days. Those on the right say the proposal's too big. Some of the left say it's not big enough. Are you committed to passing $1.9 trillion bill, or is that final number still up for negotiation?
It really is a disgrace.
I'm committed to pass. Look, here's some of you are probably economists or college professors or you teach it in school. This is the first time in my career, and as you can tell, I'm over 30, the first time in my career that there is a consensus among economists, left, right, and center, that is over, and including the IMF and in Europe, that the overwhelming consensus is, in order to grow the economy a year, two, three, and four down the line, we can't spend too much. Now's the time we should be spending. Now's the time to go big. You may recall I managed the last experiment we had with the stimulus, and it was 800, no, I don't mean it that way, but it was $800 billion. We thought we needed more than that, and we think we did. It ended up working, but it slowed things up by about, and depending who you talk to, between 6 months and a year and a half. We can come back, we can come roaring back. It's estimated that if we, by most economists, including Wall Street firms as well as think tanks, so political think tanks, left, right, and center, it is estimated that if we pass this bill alone, we'll create 7 million jobs this year.
It's 7 million new jobs.
And so the thing we haven't talked about, and I'm not going to go on because I want to hear your question, I apologize. We haven't talked about, I remember you and I talking during the campaign, and you had the former guy saying that, well, you know, we're just going to open things up, and that's all we need to do. We said, no, you got to deal with the disease before you deal with getting the economy going. Well, the fact is that the economy now has to be dealt with. And what is it? Look at all the people. You have over 10 million people unemployed. We need unemployment insurance. We need to make sure that, you know, you have 40% of the children in America are talk about food shortage. 60% of us. Did you ever think you'd see a day in Milwaukee? You'd see in the last 6 months people lining up in their automobiles for an hour or for as far as you could see to get a bag of food?
Shut up and drink your gin.
Yes. Yes.
I love the way he speaks, you know. I really do.
Yes, as do I. He's just, you know, he's real. He speaks from the heart. You know, he's what a relief. What an incredible relief that
he's so humble.
I've always liked him. I've always liked him going back to when he's 30 years in the Senate. You know, I've always liked Joe Biden. Of course, he's made other attempts to run for president in the past and have never succeeded. And even when he did, I was like, I like that guy. So good to see him as president right now. My God, I'm just so proud of him. I'm so proud of this country for making the appropriate decision. And speaking of appropriate decisions, let's talk about that. You know,
yes,
I remember there was a movie that came out. I forget the name of it. Maybe some listeners will know better than I. And the movie depicted an individual. What happens to an individual when they make a decision to get on a subway? Okay, they get on subway, and it follows them through life after that for a while. Then the movie goes back and shows the same person. If they didn't get on that subway, they got on the next one. How does that decision, as minor of a decision as that is, whoops, I'm not going to get on that one, I'll get the very next one.
Oh,
the decision to do that.
Sliding Doors.
Is that it? Sliding Doors?
There's a movie called Sliding Doors where this woman she's into a strange or something, delays her jumping on this subway, and it shows two parts of her life. If she had got on the subway, how that played out, and if she didn't, she caught the one slightly later.
That's what I thought. I couldn't quite remember what it was, but yes, that is it. Wow. And what decisions do you think that, speaking of our own personal decisions that we've made, and if anybody wants to join us here at 515-605-9888, you're welcome to share your own experiences with us. We'll open up the phone lines here. I wonder what, speaking from your experience, Amanda,
yes, darling.
What decisions do you think you have made where if at that level, you know, the next train, that not getting into, you know, going to a store, or getting into your car, waiting and then doing it a few minutes later or something equivalent to that? And how, what impact do you think, looking back, if you can recall anything off the top of your head, what impact do you think that may have had in your life, in relationship, in anything
okay.
that...
One springs to mind dramatically. It was an experience I had when I was, I think I was about 14 years old. I want to say 14, it may have been sooner. Basically, what had happened was my family and I went to this huge store called Texas, you know. And they did everything like hardware to furnishings and everything you could think of. And we walked around. We were trying to find some items to fix at home. And we couldn't find what we wanted. So my parents were getting ready to leave and we went back to the store. My mother said to me, "Oh, wait, we need batteries." And at that point, we headed back to pick up some batteries. And then all of a sudden, there was these loud bangs outside, real dramatic bangs. We didn't know what it was. The next thing we know, this woman is running in, covered with blood, and carrying a child, and screaming, call an ambulance. And then they shut the store to stop everybody from leaving, and it turns out what had played out was a guy had followed his ex-girlfriend into the car park and was chased around the car park with a sawn-off shotgun, and he shot her and somebody else, and then he turned the gun on himself. And at that point, if my mother hadn't said, "Go back for the batteries," we could have been caught in the crossfire of that incident. And I know how scarred I would have been from that, because I'm such a sensitive soul. And, you know, even when we left and saw the bodies in the car park covered over and they had everything taped off, it scarred me for life seeing that. And I often think back to that situation, how would I have been the rest of my life if I had actually witnessed it, or even got caught in that experience. So, you know, it's one of those moments that's very surreal, and it challenges you to think outside the box and go much deeper with it. I often think about how that would have affected me for the rest of my life, Andy. I really do. It was a very, very scary situation.
A decision that you made that could have resulted in absolute tragedy. Wow.
Yeah, scary. I mean, I know I realized that, you know, it wasn't a decision I made, that it was my family who decided that decision. But I think it just goes to show that it can only take one moment and one decision for your life to play out completely differently. And yeah, I dread to think what could have occurred if we'd left when we did. Because we would have seen it all playing out and possibly got caught up in it. I mean, what about you, Andy? What about you?
I've been thinking. I have decided quite a ways back not to make any decisions in my life. Just kind of hang out on the beach.
Yeah. Sounds good to me. I like that.
Much, you know, interesting. And we've talked about this, or I've talked about this, I should say, you know, repeatedly on various shows. I was a pilot, and being a pilot, part of the skills that you develop, in actual subject area and a methodology, what you look for as a flight instructor in a student,
yeah,
regardless of the level of that student, whether obtaining a type rating in a commercial jet or just getting the private pilot license, is what's called aeronautical decision making.
Okay.
And that is scenario based. You know, how are the decisions that one executes, that you conclude and you do A, B, or C, and how are they done? How is that transform from what basis of information do you make that decision, and how is the information deployed, so to speak? You know, how is it executed? And and some decisions as a pilot obviously can be, you know, people's lives are at stake depending on what that decision is. And and it's interestingly to me, because I started flying at 16 years old, Yeah. And I firmly believe, and I've promoted learning to fly to so many. It's much more expensive now than it used to be, and I realize that. But even taking a few flying lessons, because when you participate in a three-dimensional world in the sky, up, down, back, forth, left, right, you know, and decide which dimension I'm turning into, how am I going to do it, when am I going to do it, what are the results of my actions going to be from doing this, I think that has greatly affected my life tremendously, you know, from a philosophical standpoint. In how I make decisions in life, no matter what I do. Some decisions, I'm not saying all decisions I make are great, for sure. You know, I've turned down, I had some gig opportunities and some tour opportunities, and I was, nah. And I look back at those opportunities, which happened, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, and I'm like, why the hell did I say no to that? Whatever. You know, geez, you know, and people say, Andy, what? You know, I even had the opportunity, you know, some of my good friends, and some of which went on to become very well-known recording artists who I managed and helped their careers early on, when I had my recall to my airline job, you know, I was playing guitar and doing some other things in between. If my phone would ring and this person would call me up and say, Andy, go back to flying. Oh, my God, it's so who you are. Oh my God, Andy, how are you even thinking not going back? Andy, my God, it's just who you are. Go take, they recalled you, go back to flying, go do it, it's who you are. And I thought about that, and I've also thought about that conversation for many, many times repeatedly in my life when things weren't really going the way I'd hoped, and financially in other ways, you know, and I'm thinking, God, I should have gone back to flying. And I'm no regrets, believe me, no regrets whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know, now I look back and I'm like, you know, how would my life have turned out? And if I had, and I could have made the decision, I had several opportunities. Even the chief of operations of the airline called me up and said, can we have a space? You're going to put your books and your reading material at a desk in the class, in the recall class. They're here. If you don't show up, then you don't show up. But we want you to come back, and we're going to put all your study materials at a desk with your name on it. If you're not there, then you're not there. But we want you to come back here. And we got some ideas, blah, where you can progress in this company, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I was playing, you know, I'd go and I'd sell out a show, and I'd have, you know, hundreds of people watching me, and I'm writing songs. I got a record deal, and I'm touring, and I'm making a difference in people's lives with my guitar. I'm starting some businesses. I'm hiring employees. And I'm like, you know what? I could go drive the bus. Been there, done it. You can't take my experience away from me. You can't take my licenses away from me, unless I fuck up. But you know, I can go back to it. You know, maybe refresher training, whatever. But you know, I've got, you know. So that experience to me, it was a huge decision in my life, and a decision that I have looked at upon with some regret. Currently, I still do. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I, you know, I do look back upon that. You know, would I've gotten married? Would I've had my kid? You know, how would life have turned out? I probably would not have the kids I have, and I would, you know, I've got the two most amazing daughters in the world who've never had a problem from day one. No issues. They've been amazing every step of the ride. God, you know, to think that if I went back to flying, I know how. I may not have ever gotten married. I may never had these kids, or whatever. Who knows? You know.
Yeah.
But, so
I love the whole idea and concept of that question, though, Andy. It's just there's so much potential to that question that, you know, I'm sure everybody listening would be like, how can I apply that to my life?
Speaking of which, we have a caller on the line. Hold on a minute. Let me put this. Hold on a minute. Hello there.
Hello there.
Hello.
Hey, who might this be?
Hi. My name is Justine in Los Angeles.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello. And I think I heard a wonderful shout out. Yes, I am one of those two daughters.
I will
but I heard the topic of the show is decision making. I call in. And I hear, you know, just about everything about life. It's not just making decisions day to day, but, you know, how the smallest things can lead to a whole path you never expected. But it got me thinking about a book I've been reading, actually. It's called The Undoing Project by Michael Lewis. He's also written, he's written The Big Short. He wrote The Blind Side, Moneyball, a few very well-known books. It's kind of, now, a lot of them turn into films, but this whole book, The Undoing Project, is about the foundation of decision-making theory. And these two economics-based psychologists who looked at decision-making and you know, tried to debunk the idea that, you know, people, assuming every human behaves rationally, you know, in economic models, things like that, and realizing that, hey, you know what, no, there are a lot of other factors, and a lot of humans do not behave as you expect them to behave because of those psychological factors. And
yeah.
So whether it be from experiences or from, you know, relationships or life decisions or events that, that affect how you perceive the world around you, that really plays a difference into, you know, what choice you ultimately make, whether it be, you know, choosing where to go on vacation or, you know, choosing a career path, things like that. And I
yeah.
think it's really interesting that some people assert so much weight and pressure on themselves for bigger decisions. And what I'm seeing
yeah.
from this book is a lot of the larger decisions, at the end, you never know the alternative. You don't know what that is. So there's no
yeah.
reason to dig into what the alternative could be when it becomes something like choosing a career or something like that. But when it comes to smaller decisions, such as, say you're placing a wager on a sporting game or, you know, deciding the color of your living room, smaller decisions like that, when you break them down and really hem and haw, it doesn't have as much of a mental toll on you if, you know, rather than sitting hemming and hawing about a big life choice.
At the end of the day, the big life choice is going to be whatever you choose. You can't
yeah.
really imagine how it otherwise would be, but you can always repaint your living room.
Yeah.
And it was just interesting to put it all in perspective in terms of how we make decisions and what people really think of as quote-unquote rational and then what they follow through with. And depending
right.
on how that decision or situation is framed can make a difference in what the person chooses.
Yeah.
Psychologically, asking questions in two different ways, you can get two completely different answers from people. And
wow.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I highly recommend the book if anybody has an interest in kind of decision-making theory. They use statistics. The whole idea is how they could create a model to predict who would become the best fighter pilot for the Israeli Defense Force. They were Israeli
right.
soldiers, and they wanted to find, okay, are there certain qualities that will put someone in a position to make, you know, the best decisions in the air? Or
yeah.
are there certain skills that are needed on the ground? And, you know, what traits are people looking at when they – when they assign certain roles, are they looking at the right traits?
Right.
And they kind
okay.
of, that's where it all started from. And
yeah.
really kind of looking into more than just the physical attributes, but the psychological attributes when it comes to finding the best fit. But it's really interesting. It puts a lot of things in perspective. I think a lot of people put a lot of pressure on themselves for bigger decisions and, oh, what
oh,
could it
yes.
have been if I did this? What could have been
yeah.
if I did that? And it's really fun to think about as well. But, you know,
it
like,
is.
Like Andy was saying, I'm sorry, I'm in the parking lot here. As Andy was saying, you know, at the end of the day, you are who you are because of the decisions you made, and there's no, wouldn't have it any other way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
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 Fantastic.
I think it can define a person that way, definitely. Yeah.
Exactly.
Hey, Justine, can you parlay that, even briefly to whatever extent, into any decision that you have made in your life? That would have turned out A versus B that you can look back on now?
I think so in the middle of college, I transferred universities across the country from a small state school in Vermont, University of Vermont, to the University of Southern California, a giant school on the other side of the country. And making that decision, I realized looking back how much I put myself through psychologically and just emotionally, how big of a deal I made that decision. The whole time trying to make sense of it logically, when in my gut, the whole time I knew that I wanted to be at USC, but I had, for some reason, that decision-making process really kind of got the best of me in that moment. And it came down to switching my answer every single week. And at the end of the day, you know, I don't know what my life would have been like if I stayed at Vermont. Who knows if I would be on the East Coast still, but either way, I knew that at that moment in the bigger decision, I felt that USC was where I wanted to be. And that's where I went, and I wouldn't have my life any other way now. So I think it's interesting to look back on those bigger decisions and how much weight we put on, you know, the rationality of the decision. When at the end of the day, it doesn't have to necessarily be rational, but it has to be what feels best for you. And just I think a lot of times people try to rationalize a lot of decisions in a way that can sometimes take away from what you really want from that decision at the end of the day.
I want to ask you another question. I'm going back to a discussion we've been having earlier in the week on our show, and we were talking about wisdom. What is wisdom? Where does wisdom come from? Is wisdom smarts? We kind of dove into that. And what I want to ask you is, do you think the wisdom, actual wisdom, is part of the of what you use to make that decision? For example, when you transferred from Vermont to USC, or was it smarts, was it things like your skill development? What was the underlying drive that created the ability for you to make that decision? And what part did wisdom have in that?
Well, I think a lot of that decision, logically, I did have to think, okay, in terms of my life, is this going to help me get where I want to be? Or is this going to get me the same spot as if I stay where I am? And looking at, in that sense, is it really going to make me feel like I can blossom and be my best self? And I think when it comes to that kind of thing, that's not necessarily wisdom. I think wisdom comes much more from experience and being able to decipher who you truly are and what things in your life have brought that out and what things in your life have shown you that, those aren't the best things for you. And I think being wise is being able to tell the difference between those good and bad experiences and carrying that throughout all the decisions. Like following what your true self is, I think is wisdom. And I think having the ability to say, okay, maybe yes, because then smarts kind of follow along with that, if that makes sense. I don't think anybody can be intelligent and smart and make a quote unquote good decision. On paper, USC is a highly ranked school compared to Vermont, they had amazing programs, amazing resources on paper, obviously, yes, but logically a better decision. But, emotionally and psychologically, that's why that whole rationale piece, rationalizing that, it gets hard because I had friendships, I had experiences, I had, an environment in Vermont, and that was hard to leave. And so kind of being able to decipher that and thinking, okay, put logic aside, in terms of who I know about myself, what do I feel is going to be the best choice for me? And I think, obviously, there are times I'm like, that was interesting, maybe I should have stayed, I had so much going for me, but then I'm like, the next day I'll wake up and say, wow, I'm so happy I did what I did. And I think that comes with life. You always are going to think about what if, but I think the best thing is to know that the decisions that you make, if you make them in line with who you know that you are and what you value, I think that it's hard to really regret a lot, The only time you would is if you do something that goes against what you believe in for yourself. And that's from what this book is saying, is it's a lot of the inner self comes out in those decisions.
What is the title of that book again? What is the title of the book?
It's called The Undoing Project by Michael Lewis.
The Undoing Project. Cool. It's interesting that you said believe in we, because part of our discussion on wisdom, and we're gonna continue this train of thought into our shows next week. Do you need to believe in something? Does wisdom come from a belief? We touched upon that, or is wisdom derived from the human experience, which I think is more of what you just kind of outlined, and I think pretty effectively as well. But do we have wisdom without a belief in a higher power? Do we have wisdom? Does wisdom come from a higher power, or do we manifest wisdom from our own experience? That's what we said.
It's a very deep question, though, isn't it? It's a very deep question. You can just keep going with, I think.
Only on the Andy Amanda show. Yes.
Anyway, I have to go grocery shopping here, but it was lovely calling in. Great conversation.
Hey, don't be a stranger to the show. Absolutely. Don't be a stranger. We'll look forward, and you have a good time. Right. Hey, Jess, we'll talk soon. All right.
Yeah, sounds great. All right. Bye-bye.
Come to your grocery, sweetheart. Bye.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do good there. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, that was beautiful.
That was nice, wasn't it? Gosh.
Wow.
Gosh. Yeah, my own kid, Justine. Yeah, got treated
She's
better job than
darling.
I did. Oh, thank you. I actually did a better
She's
job than me.
The block.
And boy, you should hear her play guitar, man. Oh, man, and sing. Woo-wee.
Wow.
I'm proud to say she taught me everything I know. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, it's
adorable.
Oh, thank you, man. Thanks very much. Yeah,
You're welcome.
It's been, as I said earlier, it's been a great, being her dad, and Caroline, her sister's dad, has been just the most amazing thing ever imaginable.
Yeah.
In my own life experience, growing up and being an adolescent, and having families, an older brother, a younger sister, I'm in the middle. And watching other families and the family experience, kids go through phases, rebellion, anger, sneaking around, your kid, enjoy your kid when they're little, because it gets, I remember one time somebody I'd met, it's a physician who, excuse my language, folks, I'm quoting, unquote, he said, when my kids, Justine was like 4 or 5, Caroline was like 2 or 1 or something, and maybe a little older. But this Peter, a physician friend of mine, had a 17-year-old daughter, and he said, we're talking about kids, I got 2 young daughters. He said, you have daughters? I'm like, yeah, so do I. I've got daughters. I'll tell you, my oldest is 17. All she says is, fuck you and give me some money. Can I have some money and fuck you? That's and he says, that's what you have to look forward to. Can I have some money and fuck you? I was thinking that's probably, I could see, knowing from what I knew and my own experience, what I've witnessed and been told by friends and so forth, that that's happening. It never happened.
Yeah.
It never happened.
Yeah.
And for me, in my life and raising my daughters, it's been just every single phase, every single day has just been one incredible experience. Just, every step from being infants to young adults. Unbelievable. And anyway.
Wow. A testament to you and your wife. I mean, absolutely amazing. She's very smart, clearly very smart. And it's absolutely lovely to talk to her. You're a beautiful family.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I don't know if it's a testament to me. My wife, maybe, not me. I don't know about me. I don't know. but getting back to decision making, like if I, from me and my own life, that's the only experience, you talk about other people's experience from a bird's eye view, but in terms of your life, it's your own experience.
Yeah.
And if I had stayed in aviation, there may have been somebody else who's not here, but the decision I made not to go back to flying led to this amazing experience I've had as a dad, and it's been absolutely incredible. Nothing can even imaginably come close to anything. There's nothing that touches it.
Yeah.
And maybe the guitar. I don't know. and my daughters would probably vouch for that. in a different respect. But getting back again to decision making.
Go on.
Mm-hmm. No. So I was going to ask you, going back into your life, like what do you think?
There's pivotal moments in my life that, I think to myself, if I'd done this differently, how would it have turned out? Like, for example, I wish I'd focused more on music when I was a child, taking classes and specific extra classes at school to follow that passion more than, art and graphic design, which everybody was nudging me in that direction, saying, yeah, you're really good at this, you should do this. And I was like, yeah. Okay. And, I think about how my life would have turned out then. And then I think about if I'd actually gone to university and took it even further, because all I did was go to college, which I could have gone to university after this college. But I left college with everything I needed. I managed to get a job straight away from college, luckily, in the field that I was trying to get into. So, I often think about if I had gone to university, would I have had a much better job, a more intense career in that sense, or would it have been enough to drive me to music completely in a different direction, because that was something I was battling with at the time as well. So, career-wise, that's the things I look at and think, oh, my life could have been different. And if, you know, if I didn't make a decision to be with my ex-partner, how life would have turned out, because, you know, I had lots of different plans for my life. And mm-hmm. so there's lots of key elements in my life that I look back and think, oh, yeah, I wonder how that would have gone. But I don't regret any of the decisions. I don't regret them all.
No, I don't. I look back and wonder what would have, how would it have been. I do think about that. I'm a very sentimental romantic. Like if I'm, you know, with a girl somewhere or going sailing, you know, everyone is dating and stuff, and a girl would come down for an incredible romantic, so to speak, weekend on my sailboat. And then the next time I go down the boat, I'd be by myself and I'd be like, oh, we sat right there. Oh, that's where we sat. Oh, we swam over there. Oh, you know, these little things. I am unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. You know, like a shirt I wore, you know, I'd be like, oh, I'm not going to wash this shirt. You know,
be there, Andy. Be there.
You know what I mean? Or if I was with it, mostly having to do with girls. I must admit, mostly girls.
Okay.
Romantic experiences, other experiences, but the. Or, you know, if I was did a major concert somewhere with my band or something, and then I go back to that venue as somebody's watching, and I'd say, oh my God, I stood right there with my band, you know, that kind of thing. But if I was out with a girl and she's wearing a particular musk oil or whatever scent or something, and then I, you know, it would be on my shirt, and when I took the shirt off, I'd smell it, and I'd say, oh, and the next time I'd put the shirt on, if I didn't wash it or something, I'd still have that, I'd still smell it, and I'd be like, you know, I'm such a sentimental romantic. It's just,
you know, Andy, I can so get on board with that because I'm exactly the same.
Are you
exactly the same? Yeah.
Oh my, you and I as a couple, we'd be like, oh my God, we'd be like, we'd be hopeless. We need it.
I know.
Oh, my thought, God. I mean, that would be dangerous, wouldn't it? Oh, my God. Between us.
Oh, what are you like?
Oh, my goodness. But, it's that. So, but I look... you know, I had a, you know, speaking of girls, I was with one girl who was, and I'm still friends with several of my major relationships, you know, had shorter relationships, you know, not a lot of one night, what they call one night stands. I've had very few of them here and there, but mostly long-term relationships, you know, one long-term, then another long-term. I'm not one to just date different girls for a couple months at a time. I've never just done it. And part of that is because I'm very bad at meeting women, girls. I've always been very shy that way. But so I never really, you know, I get relationship, boom, there I am. And it can be years, you know. So one of those, I think I went with this bigger girl for 5 years in my early 20s. She was an English major at Temple University, went on to get her advanced degree, become a teacher. But she told me at the time, and I was a pilot, she knew me as a pilot, knew my pilot friends and so forth. She said, yeah, you know what you should do? You should go back to school, go to Temple. You get in at Temple, go back to school. Go, you know, pursue another degree and get a degree in communications. You would be great, like, on the radio or in press and journalism and, in you know, some kind of marketing communications and public relations. You know, flying, I don't know if it's cool that you're doing it, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I see you, like, with a communications degree. And what are you and I doing now? I mean, we have this internet show. I know it's not this major thing, but we hope it will be someday. But you know, just looking back at that decision, sometimes I look back and I feel so at home. And I've had an advertising and marketing firm. You know, I felt, you know, I did that. I had employees in that industry and blah blah blah. And I wonder how would my life have turned out if instead of becoming a pilot, or maybe I'd become a pilot or whatever, and say, I did get a degree in communications. Like, what would I've got? Would I've been, you know, could I have gotten an anchor job? Would I've been a weatherman? Would I've been, a DJ? Yeah. Andy, the weatherman. you get one trek on this world, and you make decisions in this world, and hopefully. You don't live with regret because I don't live with regret, but you just kind of look back at what the possibilities could be and would have been and might be in the future in your life. And it's important just, I think, to get, you know, and again, coming back to that wisdom, you know, that word wisdom and the definition of as we have been defining it and going about exploring what effect wisdom has on your love life, on mending your life from getting over something that was horrific or traumatic to you, to whatever that is. How does the experience and the definition of wisdom aid and comfort you, enable you to move on with future decision making? You know, what is the connection between wisdom, smarts, decision making, and thereby life itself? Next on the Andy and Amanda Show. No.
I love our deep conversations, though. I truly do. The stuff that gets you thinking, you know. And I'm sure many people who've listened to this could relate to these types of questions that we all ask ourselves at some point. And I'm one of these people who just loves diving into all this stuff, I think, Andy. I really do.
Yes.
It takes you past the normality of this world and, you know.
It does. It does indeed. And, you know, and when you kind of dive in to what makes tomorrow happen, what happened yesterday becomes less relevant into you being able to dive into making something happen tomorrow. I think that. So what happens, you know, I did something yesterday. And I have to make a decision today. Yesterday, I cooked something. Let's go something just something simple, a physical task. I cooked yesterday a hamburger. I went to In-N-Out yesterday, first time in over a year. And my youngest daughter, In-N-Out. I don't know if you remember, In-N-Out is like a McDonald's, Burger King place, but it is incredibly popular on the West Coast. Every hour of the day, there's lines of cars going through, lines of people. It takes forever. They're really, really good. Great burgers and fries, great shakes.
We don't have them over here.
No, and they're not even on the East Coast. I never heard of them. As a matter of fact, real quick, when I first heard of them, I was with my youngest daughter coming back from a gymnastics meet with a friend of hers whose mom was driving. Yeah. And the kids were, you know, we had a bunch of kids in the back of the minivan, and the kids were hungry. Well, we were all hungry. And the kids were saying, you know, could we get something on the way back? And the mom who's driving said, yeah, we'll do like In-N-Out. And me being from Philadelphia, thought we'll go someplace In-N-Out. We'll go McDonald's, Burger King, you know, go bim. You know, not going to spend any time. We'll go In-N-Out. And then we pull up to a like equivalent of like a McDonald's, and it's called In-N-Out. I'm like, oh, In-N-Out. She's like, she laughed, you know. So, oh, I never heard of In-N-Out. I thought you were like talking like literally going someplace In-N-Out. But after I had my first double burger, and you know, she got it for me. She ordered for me, you know, bam, bam, bam. There's this hidden menu. There's a menu on the main menu board, and then there's a hidden menu, which I think you can get on the internet, which has secret things that only the people who would in, you know, so you can make an order with animal, you know, franchise with animal sauce. You know, it's animal or your burger with animals, you know.
I've heard these secret menus.
So she ordered for me, and I was like, whoa. I went home, and you know, my family, I had to introduce the whole family. I said, guess what we're doing for dinner night? I'm going down to the nearest In-N-Out. I'm bringing back dinner, you guys. And it is really good. One time when I was back in Philly, I was watching an interview with some of the space station astronauts, and one of the interview folks said to the astronaut, so what do you miss most back on Earth? And the first thing he said was In-N-Out.
Wow.
I was like, and then my youngest daughter, who's vegetarian, but was able to eat French fries from In-N-Out because they're cooked in vegetable oil, unlike McDonald's, but can also eat Burger King French fries, just so you know. informed me that In-N-Out Corporation was a contributor to the Trump campaign and not to eat there. So we didn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She said, Dad, they give a lot of money to Trump. I'm like, really?
I had
really?
No idea about that. Wow.
No. So yesterday I was with my mother and we were hungry and I took her to the, you know, dentist, whatever it was. We were hungry afterwards. Let's get something to eat. And I'm like, let's go to In-N-Out. And we did the drive through and I got to tell you, man, Now, how does that conversation play into the decision that you might make tomorrow?
Yeah.
Well, here's how. I had a hamburger. I try to not eat red meat, you know, keeping the cholesterol down and da-da-da, you know, yeah. And I'm not a big fan of red meats and, you know, cows and all this stuff. There's all sorts of things you get to do. But so happened to have some what are they called? I forget. Kosher hot dogs. I forget what the name of it is, but they're hot dogs. I've told you before about my Ninja Foodie. And I learned, I looked up that you can make the most amazing hot dogs with the Foodie by air frying them. They get crisp on the outside and amazing in the inside. You can make cheese or chili dogs, whatever. Yeah, that's what I said. Ooh. And then I'm thinking, and I've had cholesterol issues, you know, in my life and all that stuff. And I'm thinking, okay. Oh my God, I've got these hot dogs. I open up the drawer and, oh my God, there's these hot dogs in the refrigerator. And you go, God, make these air fried hot dogs. And then I thought to myself, did I had In-N-Out? You know, French fries, In-N-Out, animal sauce, you know, all this cholesterol. And then I thought to myself, no. Why? Because I should eat red meat rarely and don't, you know, stay away from it, stay away from all meats rarely, stay away. And how this could affect me, because what if those hot dogs, and then a couple of days later, the hot dogs, they weren't bad, I feel fine and whatever. And then I had and that led up to some kind of cardiovascular event down the road, not just by eating one hot dog, but by the mindset, the discipline.
Yes.
Because I hope to be here for a while. You never know. You never know what life's going to be. But, you know, I hope I got to take care of the ticker. You know what I'm saying? I'm good. But, you know.
Absolutely. I hope you get it done.
You got to get old. You get older, and you know, family history and blah blah blah. So so the decision to something as simple as that. I'm going to do it, and I will let you know when. I'll take a picture and send it to you. I'm going to make the hot dogs and the Foodie next month on the Andy and Amanda Show. we'll Instagram it. Yeah, we will. That'll be cool.
Yeah.
But you see what I mean? So what if, you know, some folks who have had unfortunate, let's just, you know, cardiovascular events, whatever it might be, and looking at their lifestyle and decisions that they wish they could have taken back, you know, eating that diet, eating a lot of steaks, eating a lot of red meat, not getting exercise, not taking care of yourself, and bam. Sometimes the first symptom of cardiovascular disease is death.
Yes,
that's a fact. It's a fact. It's sometimes the first, and many of us can have warnings too. Many of the population get, what's that? What's that about? You know, go get it checked out. You know, you got some blockage. We'll do a stent. We'll do a drain. You know, boom, you wouldn't live to your 99 years old, whatever. And some folks get warnings, and they don't, or they don't get a warning, and the first symptom is a major blockage. Boom, and you know, so. And you look at all that, and you look at things that, you know, there's so many things that are beyond our control in life. But is it through wisdom or smarts or just education that enables us to make the decisions that in our overall behavior?
It's kind of what are you best, the chicken or the egg situation? Because I'm sure there's a lot of things that come before a decision that makes it wisdom.
Mhm. You know, when something is learned, what is the overall result?
I think when something is learned, that's the true meaning of wisdom. Because you've applied that experience to your life, and you from that experience, somebody else gains from it, and that is wisdom.
Yes. Boy, I can go back. I can talk about this forever. I'll tell you, this is fascinating.
I know, right?
If I told you, Amanda, I want you to, like, take a piano keyboard. We can all, everybody, I don't care if you play it or not, everybody can visualize a piano keyboard. Yeah. And I say, I want you to play this note and then that note. And then you do it. Did you learn anything by that? Or you just did it via what's called rote? I show you, you do. Did you learn, right?
Okay.
I go. You play a C and then a D, right? A C and then I go up. Do re mi fa sol la ti. You go C D, right? And D is the next note after C, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. How to check? All right. Let me go look. Wait a minute. So I play C D E or Mary Had a Lamb E D C. EDC, Mary, like Mary Hello Lamb, going down. Right? And then I show you, that's how you play Mary Hello Lamb, go EDC, and then you do it. That is rote, right? I do you repeat because I showed you how to do it and you did it.
Yeah.
There's no understanding as to what happened with the combination of those three notes. And if there's no understanding, there cannot be a behavioral change.
Right.
So it cannot be learned. See what I'm saying?
Okay.
So we have rote. We have understanding what the relationship and the correlation between those three notes. Because I know those three notes, I can play them backwards and forwards and play them out of order and predict what the melodic line is going to be.
Yeah.
Because now I understand the correlation. I understand the connection. Now, what's the next level? And I'm just using music as an example, but we can project that into any aspect of our life, anything. I don't care from playing golf, playing baseball, driving a car, flying a plane, whatever it might be. I don't care, scuba diving, sailing, whatever. Sex.
I was waiting for that one.
Well, we can talk about that next, on the next Andy Mander show. So we understand now the relationship between the three notes, and we can play them. Now I can go compose a song.
Okay.
Because of the understanding I had between those three notes, because I can compose that song, I can compose many songs, maybe make a record.
I see.
Now that has created a change in behavior in my entire life.
Yes.
Right? So we have rote. We have understanding and connection correlation, and we have ultimately a behavioral change.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
So when I make that decision, ultimately, what can occur in your life? And we're talking about this, folks. Amanda and I are talking about this from, you know, this – In abstract, we're being very, very abstract. I understand that. We could be talking about love life and work life and getting a new job and finding a career and finding a new boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever it might be in your life. You know, leaving home, coming back home, I mean, you know, moving, you know, taking up skiing or skydiving, you know, all these different things. But we're talking about this from a very abstract conversation right now, and we'll dive into it more as we move along in subsequent conversations in our shows, and how it might affect your life and your particular situation. But we do need to call in and talk about that at 515-605-9888. Our time is up, they're telling me. The lights,
okay.
We're kind of looking at the clock here and saying, whoa, and our hour and a half free flow on Friday, it's been pretty free and pretty flowing, I would say, on Freaky Friday afternoon with Andy and Amanda. Great doing the noontime show here in California, the 8 p.m. show there in the U.K., and the 3 p.m. show live. I'm talking live, of course, because somebody might be looking at the watch and saying, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. But this is recorded live. And folks, those of you who are listening to our podcast, we know that you are, and I'm talking to you. You right there. You beautiful people.
Okay. Yeah.
You. What I'd like to have you do is email andyandamandashow@gmail.com with an experience that affected you in your life and a decision that you had to make that created that experience. And do you regret it? How did it change? What behavioral change occurred as a result of that decision? And I'd like to talk about you can email us anonymously. We won't mention your name. Just send us that experience, and we'll talk about that as a foundation for future conversations. I request that you do that. Whether they do or not, Amanda, we don't know. We hope that you do. We hope that you're picking up.
We'll keep Andy, the ball rolling.
Yeah, we're going to keep the ball rolling regardless. Andy and Amanda Show at gmail.com. It's the email and our number, of course, if you want to get in on the show here in the United States and I guess in Canada. Oh, I want to talk to you about that just for a second. 515-625-9888. Mexico, Amanda, has now exceeded the Canadian demographic population of our listenership. Mexico is now higher than Canada.
Wow,
every week, Mexico is climbing and climbing and climbing in small numbers. I mean, this isn't a very big show right now. We know that. We've talked about that. We hope to change that down the road. But given that, the numbers in Mexico are starting to exceed the Canadian population, and also in Australia. And
wow.
The new countries, Italy, France, and Germany, they came on board last week, and we welcome everybody in those countries who are hopefully enjoying and being entertained and listening to our conversation. Sometimes we get more silly and comical than other times. We kind of
They vary, don't they? They vary from show to show, depending on what we're talking about, you know, and... Mm-hmm. Current situations and our shows do vary quite a bit, and I agree with you, Andy. I hope they're enjoying listening to what we're sharing. And
yes. So we'll go ahead and wish everybody a wonderful weekend ahead. I can't believe it's another Friday. I look at these Friday shows, you know, going back, you know, we've been doing this program here, Coast to Coast program. For 1 year in mid-April, and April's approaching. I just can't believe, you know, we have 230 or something like that episodes, and it's been wonderful, and it's been amazingly wonderful having Amanda Love as a partner in this program. It's just been
aww, likewise, my darling. Oh, you're flattering me.
and of course, Cornell Butler, who can't join us because of previous obligations at this time period, but he is our show coordinator, and I give him all the credit. And it's due to Cornell that this show exists and that Amanda and I are able to do it. So we
absolutely. He did an amazing job,
and he will be joining us in future shows from time to time, and or different time spots when we do the show at our normal time. He'll be back on, and we definitely enjoy making him part of the show when it's practical for him to do so in his life. So, Amanda, have a great weekend, everybody. It's been wonderful. We hope we've enjoyed our time together, and look forward to the Monday show. Monday show in UK is what time in UK is Monday? Because it's 3. No.
No, it's 8 p.m. in the UK.
On Monday, it's 8 p.m.?
I don't know. Are we doing the same hours as this week, or are we going back to normal?
No. Monday is 5 p.m. in UK. Monday is 5.
Oh, okay. We're doing 5 p.m. on a Monday. Okay, no problem.
5 p.m. on Monday, 9 a.m. This is for the live show. And you can podcast, you know, 100 shows or more on all our podcast channels. You can go back and listen to some of the crazy conversations we've had. A lot of them have been really fun and kind of zany and silly, and some have been more serious and passionate and everything in between. And some even have great music. We played some amazing music on the show, which we're going to touch upon again. But listen to some of our shows, folks, and let us know what you think. Give us your, you know, what do you think this show? Do you think we should be on radio? 515-605-9888. When we're on Blog Talk Radio, I'm talking about real radio, terrestrial radio. Let us know. All right. So, Amanda, take it away and have a great weekend, everybody.
Yes, please do, everybody. So, from Andy Kimball in the stunning and beautiful Hollywood, and from myself, Amanda Love, in the UK, thank you so, so much for joining us for another show. We are so grateful to have you with us and enjoying the madness with us. And we look forward to catching you on the next show and hopefully get to hear from you. So, you take care, have a wonderful weekend, and thanks again for listening. We love you.
Yes, everybody, have a great weekend, man. We'll see you again on Monday, another week of the Andy and Amanda Coast to Coast program. Take care, folks.
Bye, everyone.